Unorthodox's reporting from Israel, which we're sharing on the show this week, was made possible thanks to support from the Natan Foundation, the Maimonides Fund, and Tablet.
Hey there, it's Liel, and we're now on day two of Unorthodox's special week-long series of dispatches from our recent visit to Israel. Yesterday, we took you on a harrowing tour of Kfar Aza, one of the kibbutzim that was worst hit on October 7th. Today, we want to tell you a very different story, a story about the war's non-human victims, like these guys. That sound you hear? These are dogs, about 90 of them. They're here in Kelev Bamoshav, a lovely kennel in the small community of Tidhal, not too far from Israel's border with Gaza. And they're here because their owners were killed or kidnapped or forced to flee their homes on October 7th. Who's the incredible person who took them all in and who feeds them and cares for them and plays with them at great personal cost and without any certainty that any of these animals could be rehomed anytime soon? You know what? I'll let his father tell you all about him.
My first son came here with me when he was 3 years old. He had his next sister was 1 year old when we came here. And I think in the few months after we came here, I bought him a golden retriever puppy. And he raised him by himself since he was 3 years old. And all of his life was around animals, dogs, cats, rabbits, fish. He raised them in all the free area that he found. He built them cages and yards that they can grow in.
That's Yaakov Shimshon. And the animal-loving young man he's talking about is his son, Roi. The Shimshons emigrated to Israel from Georgia, as in the former Soviet Republic, not as in Midnight Train 2. And they found their home here on this moshav. Life in Tidhar is charmed. There are about 160 families living here, and many make their living working the land. If you buy a potato or an onion anywhere in Israel, there's a fair chance that it came from the fields that stretch right outside the small but gorgeous homes here. And because it's such a small community, it is often spared the rocket barrages from Gaza that are part of everyday life for larger nearby communities like Ofakim or Sderot or Netivot. So Roi used all this open and peaceful space to raise animals. And when he grew up and was about to join the IDF, Yaakov wasn't really surprised with his son's choice of unit.
In the army, I was in Golani, and there was a place for him in the recon of Golani waiting for him. But he chose to be in Oketz, in the K9 unit of the army. So he made that choice and he got it. And after 1.5 years in his service, happened the Tzuk Eitan operation or war. And he came there. It's a miracle that he's alive because he was with the Maglan unit in Khan Yunis. And they came into a UNRWA medical clinic that they built. I've been in that clinic in 93 when we handed Gaza to the Palestinian Authority. And I know that clinic. In Tzuk Eitan, I brought him in the night to go with Maglan to that operation. And in the morning, it was, I think, something like 3 or 4 in the morning, there was an explosion of 1.2 tons of TNT. He got an order a few minutes before from the commander of the Maglan unit to go out with his dog to find a tunnel entrance in the yard of the clinic. And then was the explosion, and he was thrown from the blast, something like 12 meters, to the wall. And he and his friend from Oketz that was with him, because his friend's dog was killed in another tunnel 2 days earlier, they weren't injured. All of the unit of Maglan, there were 3 dead soldiers and 21 injured. Injured difficultly, and some were a little bit injured minorly. When he got back from the army, and he He told me that he wanted to be a dog trainer. I told him that I will give him these 5.2 acres of land that he can build whatever he wants and do the dog training that he wanted, because he got two offers: to do dog training in the army or to do dog training in Mexico. He was offered a lot of money to do that work, and I told him he's not going to do anything like that in other places, only in this country. So I gave him this spot, and he didn't need no psychological treatment after the war, and he was badly damaged mentally from his experiences, and this work made him whole again.
So now it was time to meet Rui. Even though it's been more than a decade since he was in military service, he still looks in top shape, like someone who could easily put on a helmet, grab a gun and his trained dog and run into combat. He invites us to a small sitting corner right outside his main kennel. There are two giant, beautiful gray parrots here. One is Rui's, and the other belongs to a family from Kibbutz Nativ HaAsara that had to flee on October 7th. All around are also cats and goats and other animals you'll be able to hear occasionally during our conversation. So me and producer Josh Cross and our friend tablet writer Armin Rosen had a lot of questions. But the first thing Rui wanted to talk about was what life was like on that dark, dark weekend.
The first time I met a family from Kibbutz Nirim. They are the first family that came here with the dogs. They are the parents of Rimon, one of the hostages. Rimon and Yagev. Yagev is her husband. They came here early in the morning of Sunday, after that Black Saturday. They came here with the one dogs. They are my clients before that Saturday. Most of the dogs here are my clients before. So they came here and they came with two dogs that I don't know. And I asked them, who are the dogs? And they told me it's Rimon dogs. They're Rimon dogs. And I asked, okay, where is she? Where she is? Everything is okay? You know, like everything is usual. How is she? She's okay, because you know there is missiles. We heard about all the killings and everything, but I didn't even thought about that the parents could be here with the dogs in the time that the kids are in Gaza. I don't know. I don't thought about it. So I asked her, they're okay. Where are they? And she told me they're hostages. I've been here with my wife at the morning because I knew a lot of clients will come here, because it's happened every time that all the kibbutzim and moshavim at the Otef Gaza, they get out, and after all the bullshit stops, they're coming back. So I knew it's gonna be. Me and my wife was here because nobody wanted to come to work. Three of my dog trainers are in Miluim. The other ones, like Danielle, she is the secretary, she didn't want to come, you know, she's afraid. So she told me I'm not coming to work, and others too, like her. So only me and my wife were here. My wife heard it, what Avital, the mother of Ramon, said, and she started to cry with her together. They never met with each other, and she hugged her and everything, and both crying. I don't know even how to call it. They put the dog here, go out, not know even where. From that day until now, we are with 90 dogs every day for more than 2 months, with a lot of stories. This is the first story, and after that, more and more stories of people from the kibbutzim and from the moshavim, people that only made the trip, you know, at the area, bike riding, running and everything. And it was the last riding or last running they make in their life. Usual Saturday in the morning. And this is what happened to them. And the families talked to us that they need place to take care of the dog until the Shiva will end, until they get a new home, until it will be possible to take care, you know, a dog, because they can't even take care of themselves in these days. And this is the story.
So there are dogs
hard.
Here, people who are still hostages in Gaza, there are dogs here, people who were killed in the attack, there are dogs here, people who lost their homes in the attack.
Yeah.
All over. This. You need to know about this Saturday, during his work here, in something like 1:30 in the afternoon, he got a phone call from his friend in the army that he was a police officer with my cousin, the son of my mother's brother. His name was Yitzhak Bazukashvili. He was a police station commander in Segev Shalom. And he got a phone from his friend that told him that he thinks my cousin
died
because he was shot in Reim with an RPG to his police. So I'm with my gun in my yard. His child is with my wife, and he and his wife came here to treat the dogs because they had no help in this day. And he maintained this work until today with 80 or 90 dogs in every period of time. You need to understand that in an unusual, ordinary day, we got here something like, at the most, 30 dogs, not more than that. So is all work until here is three times more than he has in an usual day.
And no help.
And no help. Only after 1 week we started to call volunteers and...
We have volunteers, mainly young kids, 14, 15 years old
from the Moshav.
They weren't going to school. Their parents...
The parents called me and asked me if I can take them.
To give them some work to do. So they came here. We have something like five or six of them that replaced themselves. And they come here and help in these 2 months from this Moshav.
And what it's even harder is, think about it, it's hard for us what the dogs feel. All the bumps, all the shooting sounds.
Anxiety.
Yeah, our anxiety, you know, it's they're
it
getting
reflects.
It. They're getting it always.
On the animals.
So you need to work on yourself because I felt it. When I feel, you know, weak and anxiety, and when the anxiety, you know, it's falling on me, they feel it. And they getting, you know...
Disturbed.
They getting
nervous.
Nuts.
When they came here, what mental condition were they in?
At the first days, they was like, you know, in freeze mood. Nothing. You know, it's like, just like a doll. Not really a dog. Because every sound make them, every bomb or every shoot sound make them to freeze.
And they lost their people. They're all of a sudden in this.
Some of them, yeah. Some of them.
Environment they don't know. Yeah.
Some of them don't look on the only on the environment. When you switch dog from one person to other person, and the two persons are in anxiety, the dog feels like no one can help me because only what the dog only needs is someone to lead on. Someone to...
They can look at.
מישהו אסרטיבי, מישהו שיוכל לעמוד לידו, מישהו שיוכל להחזיק אותו ולתת לו ביטחון. I don't know what to say it in English.
Someone to give him confidence. Yeah. Someone who's assertive, who could lead, who could give him
and
a sense of security.
Yeah, and when he don't have it, he need to find it. At the first weeks, it was hard for them to find it, to the dogs. So we needed to do it.
Were they suspicious towards you guys?
Sure.
Yeah.
There is one dog, it's a famous video of him, one dog, his name is Farid, was found in a car, all the car was shooting bullets, and he was inside. I don't know how many bodies were inside, I don't know how many, because I didn't bring him here, someone else bring him. They called us if they can bring him to here, I told him yes. They tried in, I think, 2 or 3 hours to get him out, because he tried to beat everyone and to attack everyone. So they did it with a stick, you know, with something that will not harm them. So they took him out, and when he arrived here, it took a couple of hours, and then he became a friend of us. But until he got there, if you didn't know how to come to him...
So this poor dog was in a car with his owner. And
we thought that like this. We thought it was his owner, but no. This is even scarier, because he just ran away to that car. And get inside to that car. We thought it was the owner, but we searched on the chip on his neck and we saw a number. I called the number and I found the family.
And she told me she is on the way to Eilat because they're running away. And all the kids and the car are yelling, you found Farid, thank you very much, thank you very much. Keep on him, take care of him until we come back. They didn't come back until now, 2 months. They didn't come came up even to, you know, to visit or something, because they are, I think they're very scared. And the dog is here.
How do you approach a dog like this? What do you do?
You need to show him that everything is okay and that you're not afraid from him, because this is the only thing he need to feel, is that you're not scared from him. And after he feels it, he can trust you, because he tried to ask you, I don't know, it's זה מאוד קשה באנגלית, וואי, בעברית אני, כי האנגלית שלי גבוהה. תראה, מה ש... בעיקר...
בנקודות.
כן, בנקודות עצמן. יותר הדקדוק. בעיקר מה שאתה צריך להראות לכזה כלב, זה שאתה לא מפחד ממנו, כדי שהוא יוכל לסמוך עליך. למה זה ככה? כלב שרואה שאתה, כמו שאמרתי מקודם, שאתה אסרטיבי ואתה חזק ואתה לא מראה לו את הפחד, שבעצם הוא יכול לשען עליך, כי הרי למה כלב תוקף? זה מסיבה מסוימת, כלב תוקף שהוא מרגיש מאוים.
So the dog only attacks when he feels threatened, but if you show him you're not threatened, he's not going to attack you. You have to show strength and assertiveness.
Exactly.
Which sounds a little bit like a political kind of thing for this entire war.
Exactly. You know. You can't say in a better way. This is the thing. And all the dogs are like that. They're even a bigger problem. Because, you know, I wanted to help. This is why I took all these dogs. And of people like me wanted to help and take the dogs, to take care of them, until the families will come back. But not everyone do it right. Because a lot of people or families that took dogs, they didn't know how to... איך להבחן את הכלב.
And to diagnose the dog.
Yeah, the dog. If it fits them, or the family, or, you know, or the kids and everything. And a lot of people opened their heart, but not their mind. And after 1 or 2 days that the shock was the dog was like you know like in shock, the dog starting to get
aggressive.
Before the aggressive is starting to the dog הכלב מתחיל להיות יותר עם ביטחון, כי הוא רואה שהכל בסדר והוא יכול לבדוק מי יכול לעשות מה. זאת אומרת, מה מותר לו, מה אסור לו וכאלה, ואם הם לא מספיק מראים לו את זה נכון, כי הם רוצים לפנק אותו, למה הוא עכשיו עבר את מה שהוא עבר, והמשפחה שלו עברה והכל, אז הם רוצים לפנק אותו.
It's very bad for the dog, they just want to pamper the dog, and the dog takes this as a sign of like, oh, I can do whatever I want in this house. And so then the family's like, oh, this is...
It's not shown dominance by the family that gets him to
And then the aggression starts.
He gets dominant.
And then the aggression starts. Most of the aggression starts when the dog don't have boundaries, because he don't know the people, he don't know the home, he don't know everything. And then the siren starting again. Yeah, and then he trying to escape. And then the people trying to hold him.
Yes.
But he don't know them. What you holding me? Don't hold me. I don't know you. Don't do it to me. The dog, you know, he asks, and they keep holding them.
How long can you do this for?
You know, 3 times capacity with a third of the workers, something like that.
It depends on the people, mostly of the people, because at the first month, I took everything on me. Me and my family, my friends around here and everything. Now there is more volunteers that coming, and we do, I open donations because what you asked, we don't know how long it will take. So we need to get prepared to 2 months from now, 3 months from now, we don't know. Even the families don't know where they're gonna get back home. They don't have home. Most of the dogs that in here, they don't have a place to come to get back to. So it's a good question.
The families in the kibbutzim, most of them of the kibbutzim that was attacked very badly, the homes are burned. They have no place to come back to. So this operation, I know the animals treated him very good and made him stronger. So these dogs will make the family stronger when they will have a place to come back to. The animals are a very good treatment to the family. And we see that in the photos of the hostages that came back in the last hostage that were released. And the dogs met them. Rimon.
I say it in a different way. Okay. I say it in a different way. A lot of people ask me why I do it. And I'm so good that I like the dogs, and I love the dogs, and I love animals and everything. I like them. I love them and everything, but I don't do it for them. Really. I do it for the families because I know what they need. And when all your world is gone, and you have even the little piece that a dog can give you, from what you know, what the world you had before, so you don't have the home. You don't have the garden outside. Some of them don't have brothers, fathers, mothers, and everything. If they will come back and the dog will be there, it's everything for them. I know them, I saw them. And I know myself, if I were in this situation and I will come back and after someone took care of on my dog, and after all this, I will have my dog back, it's everything for me.
Dogs helped you a lot in your life.
A lot.
Dogs and little children gives a person what's called unconditional love. Dogs, they don't want anything from you. They want your presence. And the love that a dog is giving a man, it's unconditional. So when these families that their whole life was destroyed and burned and worse things than that, when they will have their dog back, this love is the start of the growth once more. It will be the start of the healing of the family.
You know, what was it like for you after the army?
רגע, אני קוראים פה, שנייה. כולם התעוררו. תן לו רגע. יש אחד שהעיר אותם, את כולם, רגע.
And then, רועי did something incredible. He got up and said one word and proved to us why he's the Harry Potter of dog training, someone who possesses truly magical abilities. Here, have a listen.
Die, die. Hey, hey, hey. Booba, Booba, shake it. Shh.
See that?
No, but it's
by the way,
it's for a short time.
Fuck. That was amazing.
No, it's for a short time.
His master's voice.
Now it's getting back.
Wow. After this interview, he will show you some of the capabilities of his dog.
And yeah, they show some. Some of it.
That's the craziest thing I've seen since I got here a week ago. So you said that the way that you get the dogs, the way that you settle them down and counter their anxiety is to like show them that everything's going to be okay. But people in this country, and from the sounds of it, you aren't convinced everything will in fact be okay. So how do you get into a mindset where you can help the dog?
It's a good question because I tell you it in the straightest way. I'm lying to them. This is the dance. Like I'm lying to my son, like I'm lying to, you know, to my friends, my wife, everything, every time. You know, it was a hard question for me because I do it every day. I'm lying to them every time. See how I'm reacting to that question. But there is no other answer from this answer. Every day we need to lie to the dogs. But in general, dog training, it's some way lying the dog. When I'm telling my dog to sit down and then to do down, I'm telling him that if he will do it, he will get something from this behavior that he made. Sometimes he gets it, sometimes he don't get it. You know, it's like to raise a little child. Be well, you get something, you know. So sometimes it's, you know, you say it for nothing because you want the dog to do what you wanted. And I say I'm lying to them because when I feel like shit and it happens, I can't show the dogs how I feel. I can't show the dogs that I want to sit and do nothing because I don't have the energy and I don't have the engine to do something. They can't. The drive. They can't feel it from me because when I get here, when we get inside the yard, you will see it. They search for energy. They search for someone to respond and to מישהו שיפעיל אותם, מישהו ש
activate them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about your own experience after the army.
After the army, you know, every time that I think back, years back, it's almost 10 years back. Without the dogs, I don't know if I couldn't get to now, because every day that I had them, it was the day that I need to come to get on my feet in the morning and give them the treats they need to have, play with them, train them, met with the families, because I'm a dog trainer. It's not only the dog, you know, there is always a family behind him. So every day that I'm training the dogs, I need to train the family too. I'm not only dog trainer, I'm family's trainer, because all the problems that the family have with the dogs, it's not the dog fault, it's the family fault. And then I need to change something in the family behavior most of the times. I think that this all the years that I did it, it make me stronger, and the dogs did it because I needed to give them every day for 10 years what they need. This place haven't been closed for 10 years. Never.
Should
one day. Yeah.
We opened a small gate carefully and walked into the yard. You're always opening gates carefully here at Kelev Bamushav because there are always dogs running around, enjoying the nice big lawns where they get their daily exercise and blow off some steam. But there are so many of them here right now, many more than the facility was designed to hold, that everything here works in shifts. Well, he takes first one group of dogs to the yard, then another group, then another group, then another group. He's never not working. He was just about to show us something, but Belle, a very sweet and very large black mutt, wasn't having any of it. She mistook our microphone for a ball, and so she jumped excitedly. And even if you didn't speak dog, you knew exactly what she was trying to say. She was saying, "Hey, hey, I need to play fetch."
Took all the bell. No, no, boy. You want to say it? You think it's a game? Belly. Belly.
Belly. Belly. Belly. Belly. Belly.
She thinks that it's her ball. This is why.
Okay, so now that Belle was pleased enough to stop her manic jumping and trying to eat our mic, it was time to meet some of her yard mates.
The story is, this is Kishtu. This is one of the dogs of Yagev. He's still in Gaza. Hostage in Gaza until now. Kishtu and Pitsi in here. More two dogs in here. They are little dogs over there in the other place. And a lot of stories, a lot of stories. This one's, boy. This one's from Nativa Asara. They were there 2 weeks alone in Nativa Asara. Now they are after haircut, like you see. Aparva הייתה, כל השיער שלהם היה גמור, על הפנים. הכל היה על הפנים, כן? That's one too. אז זה גם בהתנדבות, ספרית כלבים שהגיע לטפל בהם בהתנדבות כדי לספר אותם, לראות להם את הכל.
A dog groomer who came to as a volunteer, because all these dogs were neglected for weeks. They were fine with their fur matted and in bad shape.
Which is the one that belongs to a hostage?
Those two. This one? This one? Is that Pitsi?
And
this one? This is Kishtu.
Pitsi and Kishtu.
Pitsi and Kishtu. They have more dogs. Two dogs is here, and one it's with Rimon. She were here all the time, and when Rimon got out, we took her to there, to Rimon. Boop.
Wui took us into the kennel and showed us all the animals, telling us each story at length. This one was found by herself, neglected. This one is a doctor's dog, and his owner has been working nonstop since October 7, tending to the wounded. And this one, Lily, belongs to a reservist who dropped her off before going to war in Gaza. When he dropped her off, Woi told us, he was crying, just like he was dropping off a small child. There are Israeli dogs who fled their homes and ran into Gaza, only to be brought back by IDF soldiers. And there are stray Gazan dogs who bonded with the soldiers and hopped into their Humvees, begging to be rescued from the grim reality of Gazan life. And you could tell those dogs apart from the others, Rui told us, because they only spoke Arabic and did not respond to commands in Hebrew. But all these dogs are here, and all are waiting for Rui to feed them, to walk them, to train them, to play with them. But doing that for so many animals requires tremendous resources. And on October 7, Yaakov told us, his son made a split-second decision.
It was a decision of a minute. On Sunday, they started to get the dogs. He decided with himself in 1 second that he's not going to ask the clients for money. So some of them asked him if he understands what it means. It means that he will keep the dogs with no money for a long period of time. So he told me that because we needed to deal with this obligation financially. He told me that and he told them that he thinks that it will be more than months. And it became true, because we are now 2 months after it started and we are not seeing the end of it, when the dogs will go back to their families.
Do you want any volunteers from the United States, potentially?
Yeah.
If you, really? If, okay.
Yeah. When I saw the farmers that came here, so I just thought there is a lot of dog trainers in the U.S. that I'm sure they want to. They will want to, but they don't know that we have a problem with all the dogs like we have in the family. כל יום זה משהו כמו 4 סקים, כל יום.
כמה סק?
זה נע בין 15 קילו, אבל זה נע בין, כאילו המחיר שלהם, זה נע בין 150 ל-200 לסק.
משהו כזה 60 קילו of food.
Let's go. And a lot of shit too.
60 kilos of dog food every day for about 1,000 shekels. Every day.
Hey, Archie, die. It will be hard to find the right family for the dog, but we will find it.
I hope Rui is right. I hope all these dogs would soon either be reunited with their families wherever possible or find a new forever home. But in the meantime, you too could help. I'm going to put a link in your show notes. And if you'd like to help Rui with purchasing all those massive amounts of food and supplies he needs while he houses these dogs, please consider donating.
Unorthodox is a production of Tablet Studios. The show is hosted by me, Stephanie Butnick, with Liel Leibovitz and Joshua Molina. We're produced and edited by Josh Cross, Robert Scaramuccia, Quinn Waller, and Ellie Blyer. And our team includes Tanya Singer, Courtney Hazlett, and Daron Riskay, with help from Sam Hacker and Jordana LaRosa. Our team on the ground in Israel was Liel Leibovitz, Josh Cross, Tanya Singer, and Ellie Blyer. Special thanks to Tablet's Armin Rosen. Our episode art is by Esther Werdiger. Our logo is by Jenny Rosbrook. Our theme music is by Golem. We love to hear from you. Email us at unorthodox@tabamag.com or leave a message on our listener line, 914-570-4869. Until tomorrow, shalom, friends, and Am Yisrael Chai. Broadway comes to the 14th Street Y on Tuesday, May 21st. Join us at 7 p.m. for a conversation with cast members from Prayer for the French Republic, the Tony Award-nominated Best Play. Tony nominee Betsy Adam and fellow cast members Frances Benhamou, Ethan Haberfield, and Ari Brand will take part in a lively discussion moderated by the New York Times' Mark Tracy. They'll talk about the play's themes of Jewish identity, French culture, and Zionism in times of rising anti-Semitism. This event is part of 14Y's spring season of Jewish culture. As a Jewish community center, 14Y offers a variety of opportunities for people to discover, explore, and connect with Jewish life. Visit 14streetY.org to learn more and purchase tickets to Broadway at 14Y. We are excited to announce Tablet's first ever essay competition, First Personal. Our editors are looking for previously unpublished work by writers living in North America who have never written for Tablet before. They are seeking submissions on the theme of belonging. Where do you feel at home or no longer at home, physically, spiritually, or culturally? How do you find community or a sense that you're a part of something larger than yourself? Are there places where you feel a sense of belonging or alienation or both? Tablet is seeking personal essays about your life and your experiences and how your thoughts and feelings have evolved over time. Tablet editors will review all submissions and choose their favorite five, which they will edit with the writers. The authors of those five pieces will be brought to New York City to read their story in front of a live audience. A guest judge will then select the winner. The winning essay will be published in Tablet and the winner will receive $500. For more information and to submit your essay, please visit tabletmag.com/essaycontest.